I'm talking to Jill Hartke. Welcome to Women's Focus.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why don't we start out by saying what the archivist does at the museum? We're sitting in the offices of the Albuquerque Museum, and I think it'd be good to say what you do.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I am the digital archivist, and so I manage the photo archive collection here at the Albuquerque Museum. That's a collection of about 150,000 images. And so it runs everything from negatives to glass plate negatives, all the way up to panorama prints. So all different sizes, including an AV collection of radio programs and video reels. That kind of thing. So if it's imagery, it's in photography anyway, it's in this department.
And so these are all connected with Albuquerque in some way, with the history of Albuquerque?
Yes. So the focus for the photo archives is Albuquerque specifically, but it can kind of stretch along the Rio Grande Valley. But mostly Albuquerque is the boundaries for this particular collection. Yep.
And when did they start collecting the photographs? When did they start knowing that this was going to be important?
So the photo archives is the youngest of the three collecting departments. So we started here in 1978, actually when this building was built. Mm-hmm. Before that, it was the art and the history department. And so they do have photographs in both of those departments as well. So I think from the beginning, in the late 1960s, when the entire Albuquerque Museum began as an organization, they felt that photography was important. It was an important format to collect. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until about 10 years after this organization was born that they created the photo archive department.
And tell me what your background is.
I am a librarian by trade. Mm-hmm. So I have degrees in library science and also in history. And then I was actually a children's librarian before I took this job. So librarianship is really my focus. Storytelling.
This is an exhibit that's not only photographs, but it has a video that goes along with it, and that's kind of interesting, I think.
The talk, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So the talk was part of a programming initiative from our education department. So our education curator asked me to speak about the exhibit. And it was really wonderful because there's so many stories that didn't make it onto the wall, you know? And so having that as an outlet for widening the stories of these women who I'm highlighting in the photo show was invaluable. And so the photo show focuses on five different female photographers who owned their own studios, either outright or in equal partnership with their husbands, before 1920. They had to have been in business before they got the right to vote. That was what I was looking at. And so it turned out we had five, and actually all of their stories are incredible. These are incredible women. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what keeps sort of lingering in my mind is that they all were on Gold Avenue. And I can't imagine what that must have been like, what it must have looked like. I wonder whether someone would go downtown and walk along and say, well, should I do this one or that one? Or, you know, but apparently they helped each other. They sent clients to different places and things like that. So, wow, how weird.
Yeah. So it turns out that the women, at least, appear to have been incredibly supportive of each other, either mentoring each other until the one would start her own studio, or just kind of being friendly. It doesn't seem like they were competitors the way that you might think. And Gold Avenue really was the heart of the business district in early Newtown. Railroad Avenue, which became Central, was kind of taken up by all of these transport businesses where they had like the carts and the horses and the wagons, and they were moving all the cargo from the railroad down and delivering them. So you had like the business sector kind of on Gold Avenue down there. And it's interesting because later it becomes like the place for the realtors to set up shops. So it's always been kind of a kind of a business neighborhood. It is an interesting street right there, the history of Gold Avenue too. But so Mrs. Albright is the first woman to set up shop as a photographer on Gold Avenue. And then a woman who she mentors named Eddie Cobb sets up shop down the street. And then another one arrives called Potter Studio. And this is Florence Potter. She sets up on gold. So they're all right there. Yeah.
Well, do you have any idea how much it cost for this to have a sitting and how long it would take? Because I'm wondering what sort of business it was, you know? It must have taken a while to set things up and get people posed and do the lighting and that kind of thing.
Yes, so I don't know their prices exactly. Although we have a whole lot of advertising that was being done in the newspaper, they strategically leave out the price. But as far as the amount of time, this was time consuming because a lot of these women were doing glass plates. So you had not only the time it takes to get someone comfortable in their in whatever pose you're putting them in front of the camera, getting the light right, but also there is a period of drying time and things that need to happen on the glass. The field of photography is interesting in that tintypes were really the quick method. And none of our women are doing tintypes.
Okay.
So, and tintypes are also tend to be more durable and less expensive. So you're reaching a broader clientele in terms of cost, in terms of people who could afford to get it. These women are catering to a higher cost level, I suppose, with their glass plate negatives, their portraiture, their cabinet cards. When you get into what these women are doing, because they're also touching up things, so they're adding color, you know? So this is an art, and this is something that you would get maybe when you're, and we have several examples of this, where the young women were heading off to finishing school in Philadelphia or St. Louis, and they would get their pictures taken here, and it would be, like, tinted, you know? And it was, in some ways, I guess, like a graduation portrait. I don't know, you know, something like that. It's a true memento of their life here. But they were kind of more society people, especially Mrs. Albright's clientele.
Okay.
Yep.
That was my question also, was, is this something that you would do at a certain age where everyone in the graduating class or everyone who was getting married or something like that would go and have their pictures taken?
It definitely seems like that. This is sort of a celebration of a milestone that you're passing. And sometimes it's Holy Communion, which is a big moment for a lot of young, when you see children, you see them often taking their first communion, and this is the memento of that. But yes, women going off to finishing school, that was a moment. And of course, you do have men who are going to war. That's still something that you get. And also marriages, absolutely. That's a moment that they want to capture. And the later that you get, the more babies you see. Yep.
You mean the later that you get in time?
Yes, yes. So as you kind of get further, especially when you get into the 20s, you start seeing a lot more baby portraits. And I'm thinking it's because the technology advances enough where they don't have to stay super quiet and still. So yeah, baby portraiture, while it was always a strength of women photographers, it was kind of something that people assumed women had some sort of natural ability with children. And so women and mothers would often take their babies to women photographers specifically. They didn't think men could handle the babies.
Okay.
But, you know, obviously women didn't have necessarily some secret to making the baby always be quiet or sit still. But it was just sort of assumed that women did. So even the early women photographers, they did get children, even in the 19th century into the portrait studios. But definitely you see a lot more baby portraits in the 1920s and onward.
Okay.
Yep.
How was it that women were thought that this was an okay business for women? Because not every business was, I'm sure. And in fact, just about everything wasn't something women could do. So how come?
Photography is so cool in this way. So when it starts in 1839, there's no training schools. There's no guild. You know, it's a brand new thing. And so as the field begins to develop, you have a wide open profession for anyone as long as they could afford the equipment. If you can get your hands on the equipment to make this, you can enter this field.
Okay.
So for women, it's amazing. It's a great opportunity to enter the business world that is oftentimes shut to them, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and in the 1850s, you also, again, you get those tintypes. And so it's less expensive to make, it's quicker. And women don't have to buy like a brick and mortar business. You could do tintypes in a wagon or in a tent. Mm-hmm. And so it's mobile. And there's just a lot of room for freedom in this field. Now later, in the later 19th century, you start getting the schools. But even the schools are co-ed.
Photography
schools, yes. And so one of our featured women, her name is Alabama Milner, and she attended the Southern School of Photography, which was in McMinnville, Tennessee. And she attended like right around 1900, 1901. And it was open to men and women, and she learned the art of photography from men and women at that school. Mm-hmm. So this is such a cool profession in terms of there being really no systemic discrimination by sex. You know, it's if you have the means, you can get in there. And you didn't even need someone to buy you an office or a studio space. You could, with enough resources, you could have a mobile studio. So, and that's, of course, that benefits men too. You know, it's an all around help to get in. Yeah. And they do have apprenticeships. So women often did learn, they would train from older sisters a lot of times, or their mothers, how to get into the business. So, okay. Yep.
Is this something the women who were helping each other and all situated next to each other, is this something that happened in Albuquerque or did it happen other places too?
It happened in Albuquerque for sure. And I do think it happened in the larger cities as well. Some of the case studies that I've read in terms of New York City and Washington, D.C., they also had photography districts that were set up. And so there were all of these different studios set up in the same place. And my feeling is there had to be more than one woman. Like, I don't know any the other stories as well as I know Albuquerque's. Mm-hmm. But if it was happening here, I think it had to have been happening in other areas. And I know Mrs. Albright's older sister was a photographer in Kansas, Colorado, and in Texas. And so she was moving around, and I think she probably found a community of women in each space to support her, you know, and for her to learn from in the field. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the drawing afterwards, or the painting of them or tinting of them, because some of the women that you talked to were especially known for how delicately they did that or how well they did it.
Yes. Mrs. Albright is known for her artistry. She was a fantastic fine artist aside from being a photographer, and so her talents in drawing and tinting, it all went into her art parlor work for the photography stuff. So you would be paying for her to add gold tinting to your, you know, to your bracelet or to paint a flower in your hair. You know, all of these little ornamental details, you wanted somebody who could do it well, you know? And so there was nobody better in town to do that. She was the first mentor here. So she did mentor other women and men. And so she could pass on her skills as an artist to these other photographers. But I haven't found evidence of anyone doing it as well as her yet. Okay. Yeah.
Do you have any idea how long it would take? Like how long a session would be and then how much time she would spend afterwards doing this touching up?
I don't know how long a session would be because I'm not even sure how many photos she took in one session because I really only have one example from each, you know, like survived. Yes. Yeah. And I do know that Mrs. Albright in particular had assistants. And so whether she even, and especially in her later years, whether she was the one doing the tinting anymore, or if it was one of her assistants, I'm not sure on that either. So it could be that the tinting would take longer than the sitting, right? Depending on the talent of the person.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess also how like perfectionist the artist was. I mean, you really only get one shot to put on this on this thing, right? So you had to get it right. And so I don't know. I think for me, it would take me quite a while to tint anything that like properly. But with enough skill, maybe like Mrs. Albright, I can imagine that she could do a flower quicker than anybody else, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we go look at some of the photographs? Oh, it's right here.
Yeah, so this way.
So it's just by each photographer.
Right, so yeah. So the show is designed in a way to highlight the biography of the woman and then show some examples of their work around them. But I really feel like the story is the women and their history. But the photos, like in this, so Mrs. Albright, so you can see her flowers, right? And what she would do there. And this is Mrs. Mattie Eakin. Now she's the wife of James D. Eakin, and he was kind of a big businessman in Newtown. And he would be building some of the apartment buildings, and they even had a bathhouse that he built. And so this is, you can kind of see that she is kind of a high society woman, right? And this is Nicholas T. Armijo Jr., which there was an N.T. Armijo building that was in Newtown for a long time. It got demolished, I think, during urban renewal. But his father is the one who the building was named after. So this is another prominent family. Important. That's really what you have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And this is one of the Huning children. So yep. It's she really was even she even ran in those circles. So these are kind of her social connections, not just business connections. Yep. But she taught Eddie Ross. So this is Eddie here. So this is one of Mrs. Albright's mentees, I suppose. And
we should say for the listeners that Eddie is a woman.
Yes. So Eddie, yes, exactly. And she has a daughter named Daphne. Daphne is standing here in this particular portrait. She teaches Daphne, and Daphne becomes a photographer supporting her mother in the running of Cobb's studio. Because Eddie's husband, William, dies in the early 20th century. And so she and Daphne really run the studio until Daphne tragically dies, I think 1928-29. So Eddie has to run it on her own. But she is our first link in terms of, we know Mrs. Albright taught her. And you can also see, and when you're looking at the photos, you also see this interesting evolution of female photographers leaving the studio. So Mrs. Albright, it's almost exclusively in studio portraiture that she focuses on. She does go outside a little bit, the studio, but it's mostly portraiture. But Eddie, she starts going out into the community and documenting different scenes out in the street. That's a big move for women to start hauling their equipment outside and entering sort of the greater world.
But you can see that they're posed settings. They're not caught on the run.
Exactly. No, yeah. She still definitely is using a traditional portrait mindset when she's out here. She's lining things up, she's trying to get lines properly, she's you know, setting the scene exactly.
I mean, it looks, those people are all looking at the camera, even though it's a whole group of people gathered together.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And so, they absolutely know that they are the center of this and that they're supposed to behave in a specific way.
And what about these black women portraits?
So these are clients of Cobb Studios. So they come in and they get their portrait taken. And what's cool about Cobb Studio is you get a feeling for their set design. It wasn't just come in and stand here and we'll take your picture. They were creating scenes, you know, it was kind of a storytelling that they were doing through their portraiture, which is unique and also something that probably they could charge for, right? So it's a marketing technique.
It's interesting that the patrons wanted that instead of the traditional kind of stand in front of the camera.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think sometimes you see photographers needing to cater more to the customer. Right. So if someone comes in and they want a more dramatic storytelling, like this woman's sitting in an open window and holding a bunch of flowers, okay, let's see what we can do, right? Let me roll out the window here and you can sit in it. And so there is a a business sense that I think you get when you start reading these photographs, because you know that these women are savvy, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's what I get out of a lot of these. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Florence Potter, she's very interesting because I know so little about her, which I think tends to be maybe the norm when it comes to women photographers, especially early, around the early 20th century. They do tend to be invisible. People didn't collect their work because it would maybe was not seen as important. But Florence Potter, she arrives in 1901. She sets up right there on Gold alongside Cobb Studio and Mrs. Albright. And there is no link that I can find to Potter and Mrs. Albright. But I do think there is one, because Mrs. Albright was really involved in the World's Fairs, setting up the photography exhibitions. Yeah. And lo and behold, Florence Potter winds up in the photography exhibition in 1904 St. Louis World's Fair, which is helping to be organized by Mrs. Albright. So I think there's a link. But these are the only two portraits that I know of that have survived by Florence Potter.
Okay.
Yep. And then this woman here, Otelia Hanna. Hannah and Hanna is the longest surviving photography studio in Albuquerque history. And so she ran this alongside her husband, Milton. And she was, I mean, if you were gonna like pick one person to be your partner in business, I think Otelia Hanna would be a top runner for me. She spoke like five languages. And she just was not afraid to strengthen the business. She would actually buy out men's studios and add them into Hannah and Hannah's inventory. And she also became really involved in civic organizations. So she was trying to get women to use the right to vote once they got it, like make your voice heard. She was a leader. She became president of the Albuquerque Business and Professional Women's Club.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so she really was an advocate for women in business. And I'm not really sure. I think she was taking some of the photographs, but it also could have been that she shared that particular chore, I guess, mm-hmm. with her husband. Yeah. And then they had a son who took over the business. So, okay. Yeah, it was really a family affair, kind of like
but
the Cobb.
She was sort of like the business developer.
I think so, yep. And then Alabama Milner. I think her work, to me, her work is, it just is beautiful. She's the only one who was really like what I guess you would call formally trained, because she went to the school, that the Southern School of Photography, trained, and she learned how to set a scene, how to light a portrait. And she also was doing traditional portraits like the one there of Pablo Abeita, but also she started doing portraiture that was more movement and flow, like these flamenco dancers. Mm-hmm. So she started really pushing the boundaries of where women were supposed to be in terms of photographers, not just in the studio, but she starts going out to industrial areas and photographing these welders here. And also this is the United States Employment Service office. So she was trying to really get out into the community and document what was happening, and especially the working class, really. And if you can imagine this woman here, who looks kind of unassuming, I think, but she's 6 feet tall, and she's carrying, you know, all of her equipment, and if she just shows up outside your welding shed, you know, how likely are you to tell her to leave? You know, she's really just kind of showing up and saying, hey, I'm here to take your picture, and apparently it worked. It's cool, I think, when you start to get to know these women, because mm-hmm. you start to really view them as leaders
and
in her field. Yes, yeah, yeah, yep. And then I guess, so these are the ones who survived, right? But I do know that there are several women, Mrs. Ida Millett, Mrs. Navy B. Pearson, and Mrs. Clara Starr. And they are in the city directories as being photographers at the same time as all of these other women who I've featured. But I have no representation of their work. They really only survive in the city directories. Although the National Hispanic Cultural Center does have a Millett studio portrait. Oh. So they have one.
Oh, okay.
But this is, unfortunately, the storyline you see over and over is that you might find a woman listed in the city directory, but that's it. There's no legacy that was left. So,
oh, that's too bad.
It really is. Yeah.
Of course, it's a big. It takes a lot of space, I would imagine, to keep all those photographs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. Yeah. And I think what seems to happen is that when one business would go out of business, I guess sometimes they wouldn't even clear out the closet of that had the negatives or whatever. So the person who bought the building sometimes wound up with the negatives of the studio that was there before it. And so then you're kind of at the mercy of that new owner as to whether they toss them in the garbage or they hand them off to a collecting institution or something. Yeah, so it's like a gamble anytime. If the photographer themselves doesn't figure out what they want to do with their stuff, you leave it up to chance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And for women, that's a really, that's a bad scenario.
Well, that's great.
Cool.
Will there be another exhibit of more, or what are your plans?
So for this exhibit will stay up until mid-November, and then it will come down. And right now there's no plans to do a show like 1920 onward, like the next generation. Although what's kind of interesting is that if anybody were to travel to New York City or Washington, D.C., they are actually doing a show from 1920 to 1950.
Mm-hmm.
So they're picking up a little bit where this leaves off, at least in terms of the next generation. And those are really the women whose names you start to recognize, you know, like Dorothea Lange. In the world of photo history, their names actually appear in a textbook, you know, but these women don't. The earlier women really don't. And it's a shame because really they were so intrepid. And these women really were the ones who taught the women that they're showing in these larger shows. This is where they got their training, as women like these women.
Yeah.
So
how long did you spend doing this research?
Oh, I started wanting to do this show, I think a couple of years ago. And initially I had hoped to open it last summer, but then the pandemic changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it opened in March and I was so ready for it to start and to no longer live on my computer, but actually join the walls. And it probably took me the whole 2 years. I mean, I really was editing and making sure that I had the stories right up until a month or so before we installed. So Alabama Milner, I knew a little bit about her because I was taken with her work from the time I began working here. But like Florence Potter, she was a surprise to me. I didn't know much about her. And so I definitely spent a good 2 years exploring the stories behind these women and trying to figure out how they connected and what the support system really was here. And learning that there was a strong support system was like a gold mine for me in terms of being able to tell the story.
Do any of them have descendants who are still here?
The Cobbs, there is a grandchild, at least one grandchild, who knows that this exhibit is up. And she's very into the photography side of the family. So she's really connected to that. I know that Otelia and Milton had their son, Milton Jr. And so I don't know, though, if there's still children, if he had children and if they're still around. So it's Alabama Milner had no children, but she had a huge family. So I've heard from many of her like great nieces and great nephews who know all about their great aunt Bama and what she did. Yeah, and so I've been in contact with them. Mrs. Albright had a daughter named Claude, and Claude was an international opera singer, but she had no children. But so no, actually they do kind of, and of course like Potter, I just have no idea. She I can find her in the census in 1910 living in California, but there's no children with her.
Oh.
So I don't know. She kind of like disappears. So I don't know. It's one of those things. If anybody knows like the what happens after this point with some of these women, let me know. I would love to know.
Yeah, it would be great to find out more about them. But this is wonderful to have this,
I think. Yes, yeah, thank you so much. It's been awesome to be able to share these stories, yeah.
Okay, let's tell listeners again how long this is going to be up.
Okay, so this show is up now. It goes through mid-November. You can come and see it. It doesn't cost anything extra to see it. It's just your regular admission to the Albuquerque Museum. And these are just, they're in the hallway, so there's no gallery space that you need to get into to see it. You just kind of walk down the hallways toward the photo archives and the glowing Luis Jimenez sculpture, and you'll see it. You'll see it. You'll run right into the show. So
okay, but you can't just walk in the museum anymore at this point. Do you know if that's when that's going to change?
I don't know yet when that's going to change. I haven't heard that it's changing immediately though. Okay.
So you do
need to buy your ticket online through Hold My Ticket. I think you can get to it through the museum, the website on the museum. There's directions on how to buy a ticket, but you do have to plan a little bit in advance to come in.
Except you could do it just in the car outside or something.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But you just have to have a ticket in order to get in the door now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know when that'll end. Of course, we hope it will, but I have not heard anything.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Cool. Yeah, thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Do you want to add anything? Who was it that was especially interested with women at work?
Otelia Hanna. So Hannah and Hanna had the great ability to go into the factories during World War II, and they were taking pictures of the women who had, you know, were helping the war effort. And so that is a really invaluable resource for us when we're thinking about the history of Albuquerque and the history of women in Albuquerque, joining the workforce at that point, supporting the war effort, that it's having that as documentation and having it seem like it was a priority for a studio in town to make sure that they, mm-hmm. you know, it was at the front of her mind to make sure that she was documenting it.
Yeah,
it's just very, yeah, it's very helpful for in terms of archiving.
So does that have anything to do with your deciding to go to stop at 1920? I mean, obviously you have to pick a date.
Yes. I picked it because initially I thought that this show would go up in August of 2020.
Oh, okay.
And so it was an attempt to connect it to what I had hoped was going to be a very large celebration of the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, and then, you know. Mm-hmm. And so with the pandemic kind of throwing all of that off, that was really though why I chose that date, was because the suffrage, the anniversary of suffrage, was important. And so I wanted to tie in an exhibit to that. As it turns out, it didn't matter as much because these women, you know, there's so many stories to tell outside of just when they got the right to vote,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it was a way to tie it in, but it really didn't need to be that. You know, it could have been, I could have moved it to 1930. I could have moved it to 1940. But having five women in these two hallways is good.
Yeah.
You know?
Is, yeah.
So I don't know right now that I have enough women in the following decades, new studios in the following decades, to do another five though.
Oh,
also.
Okay.
So we've gotten actually a few more since I've been working on this show, a few more women photography studios whose examples I have and I've been collecting for the museum. But we're not in a place right now to be able to do another show like this for the later generations,
okay.
Specifically for women.
Okay. But it might be that business and professional women would be the more important kind of connection, because we still have that in New Mexico. So that's really important too, I think.
Yeah, and that organization could be a show on its own,
yeah.
Right? I
yeah.
mean, when you're talking about the women who helped start it here, the just looking at the women early on who were like the presidents of that, I mean, you have Dr. Evelyn Frisbee. She is the first female physician in Albuquerque to set up her doctor's studio. And this is early, you know, this is like early 20th century. And her, she leading an organization like that, that's so focused on mentoring other women and getting women into the business world. It's an incredible story. They that's an incredible organization. And also the fact, the longevity, that they're still
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
And they're still, it's still a cornerstone of what the members believe in helping younger generations get into the business world, right? It's all about support and mentorship, which is really lovely when you start thinking of the corporate world and things like that. It's just a really wonderful it makes you feel warm inside, and it's like really nice.
Something good is
happening. Yeah, yeah.
Although their name has changed. They changed their name a couple of years ago.
And
it's now called Professional Business Women.
Okay. And it's an international thing now, right? It's not just national, is it? I think it's an international organization. I think it's grown even quite a bit, but that's interesting.
Okay. All I know is that they have a chapter in Albuquerque and one in Santa Fe.
Okay.
And the Santa Fe one is especially active with political organizations.
Cool. Okay, that's great. Yeah, I mean, that was a major part of why it started, right? To get when the women were getting the right to vote, it was beginning to try to have, it was beginning as a way to try to get women, I guess, to vote, you know, like you have this right, so use it. Yeah. And so in Albuquerque, the early meetings were a lot of politicians coming and trying to sway the women on what they believed and why the women should support them, which is cool. I mean, that's cool, right? So, yeah, it's a really neat organization. It's definitely one that the museum could do an exhibit on someday. That would be a great story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.